Welcome to the Religious Feminism Podcast. I'm your host, April Young Bennett, and I am excited today to have two representatives of SNAP, that's the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, here with me. Some of you might remember this group. They are the group that was featured in the movie Spotlight that was working so hard to stop Catholic priests from abusing children. I think this is an extremely timely topic right now with the Me Too movement. We have more and more people coming forward to talk about their abuse and to address this problem that affects basically every aspect of society, including our churches. In my own religious community, I'm a Mormon feminist. We recently had an incident come to light where we learned about a mission president, an older man in his 50s who had authority over many younger people, who had sexually abused younger missionaries in his care. So this is something that is very timely for us, but I think it's also timely worldwide. As people have become emboldened by the Me Too movement, we see more and more people coming forward. And there are activists from my own church and from many other churches that are looking for ways to make our church settings more safe from sexual abuse, especially by those who are in priesthood authority or other ecclesiastical authority. So I will let my guests go ahead and introduce themselves.
I'm Mary DeSpeta, Northwest leader for SNAP, Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. I'm an activist and an advocate for equal rights and the protection of children. I'm also a former nun for 15 years. And so the topic interests me from that standpoint also. And once upon a time, Catholic. SNAP is an open, inclusive organization, inviting and welcoming persons of all religious denominations who are looking for support and healing. So it doesn't matter what faith you're from or not from. Please come. You'll find friends. You'll find stories. You'll find people like you and know you're not alone. Please go to snapnetwork.org. There's great material there. That there's a summer conference coming up sponsored by SNAP, and it's July 6th through 8th, and it's Chicago. SNAP is celebrating its 30th anniversary. Barbara Boudin founded SNAP in 1988, and her story is that she was abused as an eighth grader in a Catholic school. And years later, when she reported it to the Archbishop of Toledo, she got very little response. And that caused her to realize that among survivors, there would probably be a lot of support and help. So she worked really hard, and she brought a small group together, eventually maybe two dozen. By 1991, she had a very small group of persons gathered, and then they had their first meeting at the Holiday Inn in Chicago, and that kind of makes me smile. And she also was on Oprah at that time. Oprah gave her about 5 seconds to stand up and announce this meeting. And so with that was the beginning of SNAP. Now the membership has grown to 25,000. And we have 31 support groups in 31 different states. And what caused it to really surge, so to speak, was when the Boston Globe ran about 850 stories about pedophile priests, and the movie Spotlight was the story of that. And it was SNAP that really provided a lot of information and kind of the kernel for that movie to unfold. Its mission is to protect survivors by exposing predators and institutions that harbor them, and to seek justice and to offer hope and healing to survivors. We don't counsel and we're not therapists, but through sharing of our stories, it also allows us to share our stories with one another and to share our own healing story, which gives the pieces and ways that we each have found to move us to healing one way. Another way to help survivors that SNAP has is we have a website. It's called snapnetwork.org. And there a survivor can find where the networking groups are, or if there are any in their state, they can read a daily story that's just come out in the media about survivors. They can read stories of other survivors. They can find resources, positive stories in the media, and advocacy for survivors helps other survivors to begin to realize, well, possibly there is a way for me to seek justice or to speak out. And the stories that we keep trying to put forward, the position we take of power in the media over abuse and confronting it, I think also a way to say, survivors, you matter, and be brave.
We also have with us today Judy Larson, who is the SNAP leader for Utah. She was raised Catholic and converted to Mormonism at age 26, and so she has knowledge of this issue in both religions.
One thing I did was testify on behalf of statute of limitations reform, and in 2016, Utah extended the civil statute of limitations for childhood sexual victims, survivors, to their 53rd birthday, which is one of the most beneficial and longest window for adults who were victimized in Utah as children. I've also been to press conferences. In June of 2016, there was a press conference regarding Native American victims of sexual assault by the foster parents in the Mormon Indian Placement Program, and I was there as a support person. And then just this past week, I was at the press conference for McKenna Denson, the missionary who was raped at the missionary training center. I've also spoke with the press, and I think one of the other things we can do is inform the public about what they need to do when someone discloses to them, to let them know that they're believed, that it's not their fault, that it's their journey. So don't give them advice about going to police or how they should forgive the perpetrator. Let them take their own journey, but let them know you're there as a support person.
An important thing to remember about statutes of limitations is that lots of sexual abuse survivors aren't able to come forward until years later. Often they are abused when they are children or very young, and it's not until many years later, after they process these events, that they feel ready to come forward and talk about the abuse. And sometimes people think, well, at this point it doesn't matter because they're older, they're away from that person, they're safe now, they're a grown-up, they don't need to prosecute anymore at this point. But that's not really the case, because often these sexual predators have moved on to abusing new children, new younger people. And the only way to protect them is for those people who have been through that healing process, who are now ready to come forward, to have the opportunity to do so, and to not be stopped by a statute of limitations.
Right. In my case, I was 52 when I finally allowed, I guess, the memories of my sexual abuse at age 7 to surface. And up until that time, I guess, I wrote a book. I'm only bringing that up because it's called Split, And that's exactly what I did. I left little Mary. I split, and she went away for a very, very long time. And that's how it is with a lot of sexual abuse and other traumatic experiences also. They're just too hard to carry, and it takes years and years for them to come forward in our for us to be healed to a point that we can acknowledge, face, and move on. And you're right, the law is made for the of perpetrators. It protects them. It allows them to go on and do further damage. It is not in the best interests of survivors. And there are facts and data that say survivors don't lie. I believe it says something like 96 to 98% of survivors of sexual childhood abuse tell the truth. And also, just along with this, the church, the Catholic Church, by the way, I don't know about other churches, spends millions of dollars paying lobbyists to fight the SLL reform. It protects the church from further scrutiny to keep the statutes of limitations in place.
Tell us about some of the best practices for preventing abuse in ecclesiastical settings.
Insisting that church groups provide trainings for their volunteers and for teachers and others connected to their church communities about things to watch for and what they might do, and to enforce policies. If they have them, they should enforce them. And one of them might be never having an adult meet alone with a child, that another person be present, and not to encourage a survivor to go to the church for help. It's sad to say, but those of us in SNAP have learned that doesn't always prove very helpful. First, go to the police or both a therapist and the police, and let them do the investigating. Don't hand that your story over to the church, because it isn't always the place to get the outcome that you need, healing and justice. I think another thing that you mentioned was really important about the SOL, the statutes of limitations. It's happening here too. In Washington, we're working very hard to undo the statutes of limitations. Another thing we might do as survivors and activists would be to testify. And I think you mentioned that you did. I have testified, and we got a small change, but maybe it's not so small, but anyone who's been sexually abused under the age of 12 has no restrictions on when they come forward. And of course, those older than that have up to 3 years after they come to awareness. So it's a small step, but that's worth working for, undoing that law, because that's what prevents a lot of survivors from getting the justice and healing that they need.
I agree, Mary. Small steps are important.
Something that I'm proud of that SNAP has done, I consider it a great big giant step. They joined together with the Center for Constitutional Rights and actually waged a formal complaint to the International Criminal Court in Hague. And they also did the same in the United Nations on the rights of the child and torture. It was the first time ever in the history of the Vatican that anyone ever had to appear before the court and they were asked for different reports that are due, I think, next month, and I'm not positive about the timing of that. And they were found guilty on, this was 2 years ago, they were found guilty of crimes of torture and abuse to children. And they found that this was not just a small problem, but it was a systemic problem throughout the world. And that has always inspired me to feel that SNAP was able to take a big step like that. And that is not over yet. So we have yet to see if the Vatican representatives produce the information that they were asked to do or not, and what will happen.
Do you have any advice for activists that might be working to prevent or stop abuse in their own religious communities?
Yes. I think, number one, anyone who is an activist needs to take care of themselves. I mean, seriously, and fill yourself up in simple ways, like taking a walk, taking a break, whatever brings you some rest and joy. And make another thought is to network with other advocates or leaders or volunteers, build some friendships. And if you have a problem or a concern, you don't quite know what to do with it or how to respond to somebody, call one of your friends or your colleagues and ask them what they might do. And what I do, because I like to write, almost every day I get the newspaper out and I just quickly go through it. And if there's an article that touches my heart that has anything to do with abuse or the church, I go right to my computer, I sit down and I write a Dear Editor. And sometimes they're taken and sometimes not. And I've had the good fortune of getting op-eds into our Seattle Times. So I will do that when I'm really, really passionate about something. So what I would say is if you like to write, and something really touches your heart, then go write about it. If it's the statutes of limitations and you see an article, then go to your computer, sit down, and do your 250 words and kiss it and send it on its way. It may make a difference. And readerships of many newspapers are in like the 8,000s, the 4,000s, the 5,000s. That's a lot of people to get your word out to and your message.
Here in Utah, we have a lot of activism. People can volunteer at the Rape Recovery Center, the Utah Coalition Against Sexual Assault. UCASA has training programs for advocates. They will be holding a 5K race to raise funds the first Saturday in May. So there are a lot of opportunities for members of the public to get involved if this is something they feel strongly about. On March 30th, 2,000 people marched to protect LDS children, asking the LDS Church to stop the practice of one-on-one so-called worthiness interviews with minor children and one adult male behind closed doors, and also asking that they stop asking sexually explicit questions. So there are lots of opportunities.
One thing that's come up again and again as we've done this podcast is, regardless of which religion it is, religions are institutions that institutions protect themselves. And
sometimes when institutions are protecting themselves, they're doing so to the detriment of the people that are part of those institutions.
Churches believe they can police themselves. They believe that they can do internal investigations and be objective and just. That is ridiculous. Actually, it makes me angry. And the Catholic Church has its own internal process. And so too with the military. And we cannot be objective in relationship to things we are a part of. Just doesn't make sense.
That is true in my church too. I'm Mormon and we have our own church discipline system. And some people believe that if they just go to their ecclesiastical leader and report there, that it'll be taken care of internally. When in fact, this system is a system in which only men are even part of it. Men decide if a trial is even going to happen. Only men are allowed to staff these trials. It's very traumatizing for a woman who is a survivor to have to testify before these all-male panels. And the risk is pretty high that they won't be believed because there aren't any other women that they're speaking to. And the people they're speaking to are the colleagues of whoever abused them, especially if that person was an ecclesiastical leader. So it's definitely not the best way to get justice.
Absolutely. I would think we would all rise up and say, no more. That does not make sense.
There is a list.
No, yes, there are only 30-some dioceses that have released the names of identified clergy abusers, and only one of those has released the names of lay abusers, and they're hidden predators who pose a risk to all children, not just Catholic children. SNAP has been instrumental in getting those 30 dioceses to release the names of identified clergy abusers, but that's only 30 dioceses of, I don't know how many in the whole United States. In the United States, known predators are sent to other countries where they continue to be priests and continue to molest. And then statutes of limitations, we've made gains, but there's just so much more to do. So those were connected to the progress SNAP has made, but then you have to always qualify it always with yes and. But it's, we said earlier, a step at a time. We can't stop. We can't stop. We have to just keep going a step at a time.
One other question I have is lots of us that are working on this in our own congregations, our own churches, we're not as far along as you are at SNAP. Oprah doesn't know us. We haven't had an Academy Award-winning movie made about us. We don't have as much publicity as you do yet. What do you recommend for us?
A story. Give us a story. Give the media a story. No one likes to be exposed. That's one of SNAP's strengths, is exposing. If we say expose the truth, there is truth in telling the story. So I would say start telling those stories. And it's so hard, especially what I know about the Mormon Church, is there's consequences. People are punished. People are taken before a court or a tribunal, whatever it might be called. Who wants to do that? So building up some kind of a network of women and or men together, who there's power in numbers. So as you can build a network that says no more of this, and begins to put that forward in the media or in whatever ways possible, that's one thing I think you can do. And I believe that's what SNAP started doing way, way, way back. They started identifying their own predators. They brought them out into the open in whatever ways they could. And they started to hold them accountable. They made noise. They broke their silence. And I think that's another thing that you can do. Break the silence. Stop the secrets. Tell the truth. And in numbers, you might be able to do that. But alone, it's not.
Stop the silence. Silence and secrecy are the predator's tools.